Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Q2 2019 investor call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Ms. Aurora Davidson. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Patrick. Welcome to the second quarter 2019 investor conference call of Amerigo Resources. I am Aurora Davidson, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Before we begin the presentation, let me caution you that our comments and discussions will include forward-looking information within the meaning of applicable securities legislation. Forward-looking information will include, among other things, forecasts and projections about our copper production for the year, which involves known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors that may cause actual results, performance, or achievements to be materially different from such forecasts and projections. Therefore, although we believe that anticipated future results, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by the forward-looking information are based on reasonable assumptions and expectations, you should not place undue reliance on such forward-looking information. We direct you to our press release issued on August the 8th and our other documents filed with the securities authorities in Canada, including our annual information form under the heading Description of the Business Risk Factors. These documents describe the material factors and assumptions that were applied in drawing the conclusions and making the forecasts and projections as reflected in the forward-looking information and the material factors that could cause actual results, performance, or achievements to differ materially. Except as required by law, we undertake no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking information made in this presentation. Rob Henderson, the company's President and Chief Executive Officer, will now provide an operational and corporate update.
Thank you, Aurora, and thank you everyone for joining the call. The first half of 2019 has been tough. MVC's low production, principally from Cauquenes, exacerbated by a low copper price, has resulted in a very poor financial performance, and Amerigo's earnings for the second quarter 2019 were negative $6.6 million. The Q2 copper production was low at 13.3 million pounds because Cauquenes material was still being extracted from the same poor quality zone that affected Q1 2019 production. However, on July the 6th, MVC completed construction of the new Cauquenes 48-meter level sump, and this new sump enables access to higher quality material located at the bottom of the deposit. Over the last month, the grade has gone up by about 20%. That is from about 0.23 to 0.27% copper. And recovery has also gone up by about 20% from the low 30s to the high 30s. MVC are working on improving the tonnage delivered to the plant, which has been impacted by wet weather in Chile and frequent power cuts. MVC is also operating its new concentrate regrind mill, thus completing the Cauquenes Phase 2 expansion. The completion of these two projects will enable MVC to now focus on improving flotation recovery via circuit modifications and reagent optimizations. We do have a significant asset in Chile, and the book value of the plant at MVC is now over $200 million. Our partners continue to demonstrate support for us. Just yesterday, we received confirmation from El Teniente that MVC will be toll treating high-grade slag from their smelter stockpile for a period of 6 months. This is a mutually beneficial agreement to both partners and is an example of our good relationship with Codelco and demonstrates that MVC has the assets and the skills to economically produce copper from mine waste material. The expectation is that MVC will process 1,200 tons per day of slag at MVC's existing plant commencing in August. In order to accommodate processing of the slag material in MVC plant, they will dedicate one of the 8 mills to slag and will therefore forgo some production of copper from El Teniente's tailings while slag is being processed. The net result is we expect to receive additional tolling revenue this year, and we maintain our copper guidance of 70 to 75 million pounds. The other good news that we reported on Tuesday is that we have signed a mandate with our existing lender, Scotiabank, to refinance our existing debt facility with the objective to reduce our short-term debt repayment obligations and provide us with more flexibility. We expect to close this facility in Q3, and Aurora will provide some more detail on this. The bad news is that copper price performance continues to disappoint, despite strong fundamental data supporting a copper price of over $3 a pound in the long term. I'm not an economist with a crystal ball, and therefore rely on experts for advice on copper price forecasts. Wood Mackenzie's latest quote is, "We still expect a stronger performance over the second half 2019, which should support an annual average copper price of $3.04 for 2019. A return to above average mine supply growth of 3.1% after disruptions in 2020 will not be sufficient to offset slow demand expectations, and in 2020 there will be a deficit in the metal market, and with cathode stocks drawn to lows of just 59 days of consumption, prices are expected to trade sharply higher to reach an annual average peak of $3.65 a pound," end of quote. So we remain optimistic, but we are taking steps to keep our costs as low as possible. MVC's recorded copper price for the quarter was $2.67 per pound, compared to $3.16 a pound a year ago. The 25-cent per pound drop in copper price from the previous quarter resulted in a negative settled adjustment of $3.2 million due to our M plus 3 terms we have on our concentrate. Aurora will give you some more color on that. At today's copper price of $2.60 a pound, we expect to generate sufficient operating cash flow to meet our current liabilities. And in part, this is due to the fact that MVC's royalty obligations to El Teniente decrease with a decrease in copper price. I'll now hand over to Aurora Davidson to discuss the financials.
Thank you, Rob. The second quarter of the year was indeed a challenging period. The combined effect of a low copper price and low production resulted in a net quarterly loss of $6.6 million, or 4 cents per share. In Q2 2019, America produced 13.3 million pounds of copper at a price of $2.67 per pound, a reduction of 10% in production and a reduction of 16% in copper price from Q2 2018. This resulted in a 30% reduction in copper revenue, from $29.2 million to $20.5 million between the two comparative quarters. Molybdenum production decreased by 50% in Q2 2019, but with a 3% increase in molybdenum price, the overall decrease of 42% in molybdenum revenue went from $3.2 million to $2.2 million between the two comparative quarters. We always stress the sensitivity of MVC's financial results to copper prices, and the Q2 results confirm this point. Copper price affects us both in terms of the price used to book sales for the period on a provisional price basis and also for settlement adjustments, which can be positive if copper price appreciates in the 3 months following the month of sale, or negative if the sale price drops. In Q2 2019, we booked $3.2 million in negative settlement adjustments to revenue compared to $600,000 of positive adjustments in Q2 2018. MVC's provisional copper price in Q2, as Rob mentioned, was $2.67. July's price was slightly higher at $2.69 per pound, and today's price is $2.60 per pound. Tolling and production costs in Q2 2019 were $28.8 million compared to $27.2 million in Q2 2018, an increase of $1.6 million or 6%. MVC's most significant costs are in decreasing order: power, labor, grinding media, and lime. These four costs combined decreased by 3% or $400,000 in Q2 2019 compared to Q2 2018. However, all other direct costs, which include Cauquenes processing, maintenance, reagents, etc., increased by $1.7 million in Q2 2019 due to accounting inventory adjustments of $1.6 million to account for the difference between production and sales in each quarter and the effect of the higher unit cost of production in 2019. The other components of tolling and production costs are depreciation, which increased by $700,000 in Q2 2019 as a result of a higher asset base at MVC following the Cauquenes Phase 2 expansion. Administration, which decreased by $200,000, and moly costs, which decreased by $240,000. Other expenses, including corporate G&A, were $1.2 million compared to $1.1 million in Q2 2018, with the increase of $150,000resulting from higher share-based compensation expense of $260,000 in Q2 2019 compared to the prior comparative quarter. Finance expense was $1.5 million compared to $900,000 in Q2 2018, an increase of $600,000, of which half corresponds to the difference in mark-to-market adjustments on MVC interest rate swaps, and there was a natural increase of $300,000 in interest expense, of which $200,000 is coming from the new molybdenum plant expansion lease. As a result of its loss before income tax decision, in the last quarter, the company posted an income tax recovery of $2.3 million compared to income tax expense of $1.1 million in Q2 2018. With respect to the cash flow sources and uses of funds, in Q2 2019, the company used cash of $4.8 million to fund operations, including finance expense, which we classify as an operating item. Factoring in working capital adjustments, net cash from operating activities in Q2 2019 was $3 million. The company used $2.9 million in the quarter to pay for capital expenditures and used $8.6 million in connection with debt repayments made at the end of the quarter. The company also received $330,000 from the exercise of stock options. The net decrease in cash in the quarter was $8.1 million. The company's balance sheet at quarter end showed a cash position of $8.4 million and current assets of over $24 million. A current source of stress in the company's balance sheet at the moment is the short-term debt we carry, and I would like to take a few minutes to refresh what type of debt we have, why it's there, and what changes we are looking at making in the near term. MVC financed the Cauquenes Phase 1 and Phase 2 expansions without any dilution to shareholders by taking two loans, both of them with the same lenders. The lenders were originally BBVA Chile and Export Development Canada, EDC. BBVA Chile has since been acquired by Scotiabank, so the loans are now with Scotiabank as lead bank and agent bank, and with EDC, each participating on a 50% basis. The first loan was taken in 2015 for the Phase 1 expansion and was for $64.4 million. The second loan was taken 2 years later in 2017 for the Phase 2 expansion and was for $35.3 million. So in total, both loans were for $100 million. MVC has met all its scheduled bank payments to date, and as of today, the principal amount that's outstanding on both loans is $56.3 million. The remaining scheduled payments under the existing loans are semi-annual payments of $11.3 million each plus interest on December 30th and June 30th for 2.5 more years, with a final payment scheduled for December 30th, 2021. This schedule is stressing the balance sheet, as essentially $22.5 million plus interest are shown as a current liability as they are scheduled to be paid in the next 12 months. When we face operational stresses that affect cash flow generation, such as what we have seen in the current year, we feel we would all sleep better at night if we could push our near-term debt maturities, and that's what we approach our lenders to discuss with a very positive response so far. On August 6th, we issued a press release announcing MVC has executed a finance mandate agreement with Scotiabank as lead bank to rearrange the repayment of MVC's existing debt in a way that pushes out near-term debt maturities, immediately reducing liquidity exposure and providing more flexibility to MVC and the company in connection with the use of surplus cash while it remains under the finance agreement. Unfortunately, we cannot yet disclose the full proposed terms and conditions being discussed with our lenders, but the obvious variables under discussion are a longer term and a different amortization schedule. Discussions are progressing well with the lenders, following a very similar process of discussion and approvals as what occurred with the Phase 1 and Phase 2 loans. The end goal is to combine the two existing loans into a new loan, essentially for the same amount, but with a different longer term and a more flexible repayment schedule. All other conditions are expected to remain the same as we have in the existing loans, and we currently expect to close this transaction in the current quarter. Rob and I will now take questions from call participants.
Thank you. We'll now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If at any time you wish to cancel the question, you may press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while the participants register for questions. Thank you for your patience. The first question is from Joseph Rigor from Las Vegas. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Thanks for taking the questions. I guess first thing for Aurora, looking at the balance sheet, the receivables balance is much lower than it has been in the last 5-plus quarters. Any reason for that? Do you think you can keep it down at that level, or should we expect a rebound there?
A significant portion of the receivables has to do with our mark-to-market adjustments on copper prices for 3 months. We receive most of our receivables within the month or the following week of deliveries, but we have to adjust for changes in copper price. So when there is an uptick in the copper price, you'll see a higher level. So the answer to you is hopefully you'll see a higher level of receivables on September 30th.
Okay. Fair enough. And then looking at the revenue, you know, your guys' reported revenue tends to kind of get all over the place, not just the pricing adjustments, but a number of other factors.
Yes.
And it seems like royalties and smelting charges were a higher percent of the revenue, like the base revenue number, than normal. Can you talk a little bit more about what might have driven that?
Smelter and refinery costs are lower this year than last year, so there shouldn't be any adjustment. The numbers are all affected by settlement adjustments, so we're trying to disclose that more clearly on our notes to the financial statements by including the line of adjustments to fair value and settlement receivables. But there shouldn't be any variables other than the fact that sometimes production and deliveries change from quarter to quarter, and that has an effect on the computation of both royalties and smelter and refinery costs. As Rob mentioned, the lower the copper price, the lower the royalty factor. So it's very hard to have linear relationships between those items, but in general terms, TCRCs are lower this year, and we've always been affected by higher or lower royalty factors based on copper price.
Okay. And then on the 1,200 ton per day processing of slag, just looking for a little bit more info there. How does your revenue work on that? Do you get paid on the copper you get out of it, or is it a flat fee? When is it going to begin? You said 6 months. Of total time, but like what's the exact timing, and then will that be reported like separate from tailings or as part of tailings for your total copper production?
Hi, John. We've been talking to El Teniente for some time. We've done a lot of tests and material, and they gave us the green light yesterday to go ahead. So we do expect to start in August. Our mills are ready. We have set of flotation cells available, and it's going to be a fee per ton processed. In terms of how we account for it, I think it's going to be very similar to what we did with Maricunga a couple of years ago with the toll treatment, so that it will be separately listed.
Yeah, it will not be included as gross value of copper produced. We'll have a separate line, just as we have for moly revenue, that we will call tolling revenue, slag tolling revenue, or something to that effect.
Okay. And then with the maintaining of the guidance, then will you be counting the copper production from this against guidance, or are you going to get to guidance without this 1,200 tons per day availability at the mill? Just so I understand that.
So that, yeah, the 70 to 75 includes the slag copper that was going to be produced.
Okay. All right, so it'll count towards it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thanks. I'll turn it over.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Once again, you may press star one if you have a question. The next question is from John Polcari from New York. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good job on a difficult environment. Two questions, basically. I was looking at the debt reduction, and perhaps I'm picking up the wrong number, because the debt reduction was a little over $8 million, Aurora?
It was, and there was the reason it should have been $11.25 million plus interest. The bank didn't process part of their withdrawals on time on June 30th, so we had about $3.2 million of debt repayment, including interest, that went through on July 2nd once they returned from the weekend. That was a bank processing error.
So the current balance is...
The current debt balance is $56.2 million.
Right. And I'm picking this. This might be wrong. I'm picking up for the prior quarter from Bloomberg, $75.8 million.
That's wrong. I don't know. They are not updated.
Okay. That answers that. What is the expiration of the labor contract? I believe it's this October, is it?
October 16th of this year.
And... that was a four-year contract?
It was a three-year contract because those are the new provisions under the new Chilean labor law. There used to be 5 years. Since we renewed 3 years ago, we're renewing on a three-year basis.
So the new one will be the same term. Has negotiation started for renewal of the contract?
They are starting, according to law, 2 months ahead of the expiry date, so they will start next week.
Next week, okay. And historically, we've all had acceptable labor relations, correct?
Yeah, we do have good labor relations, and people enjoy working at NBC. We've got very long-term employees there. But, you know, having said that, 3 years ago, we did have a 10-day strike. So the unions in Chile are still pretty active, and they have been asking for signing bonuses. So, you know, we're being very careful in telling them that, you know, look, the copper price is low. We're being stretched financially right now. So everyone down there has a good understanding of the situation, but that's not necessarily, you know, logical that we would have an easy settlement. So we are going in prepared in this discussion with the unions.
The prior contract had a modest signing bonus also, I believe. Am I correct?
It did. Yeah, we settled with a signing bonus, as you know, most companies have done in Chile.
And last question was on the power agreement, just to refresh my memory. I know it's a rather long-term agreement now. What's the expiration again on the power agreement?
It's 2037.
It's 32 or 37, so we still have quite a ways to go on it.
It's right. It's more than a decade.
Correct.
And it covers what percentage of the total power needs?
100%, all of it.
100%.
2032.
And it's at a fixed rate, I believe, or?
It is. It's indexed to U.S. inflation, so it's, you know, it's essentially a fixed rate. But it's we can sleep at night not worrying about spikes in the power, like it had done in the past.
Right, and that is, I believe, at a low level of 9 or 10 cents a kilowatt or something like that.
Correct.
Okay. Lastly, would you say you had you feel optimistic about closing the new financing by the end of the quarter? Do you think it's at least a 50-50 chance that you'll restructure successfully?
We are optimistic.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, and once again, well done.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. The next question is from Joseph Rigor from Las Vegas. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Just had a quick follow-up on the tolling. I'm sure you can't disclose how much you're charging per ton, but can you give us an idea how many tons per day you guys were doing under the prior contract a couple of years ago?
The prior contract with Maricunga was a little bit different in that they delivered copper concentrate to us, which we blended with our copper concentrate. So the processing cost was relatively small. This time, what we have to do is we get the slag, we put it in the mill, we grind it, and we produce a flotation concentrate. So the charges per ton are, you know, a lot higher than what we had in the Maricunga one, but it is, you know, a charge per ton that's independent of copper price. So we're getting the revenue for every ton we process. So, you know, it is a guaranteed form of income.
Okay, so I shouldn't use the old contract as an indication of what this one might generate in revenue. And is it fair to assume standard kind of toll milling margins that I see across the industry of 20 to 40%?
When you talk about percent, again, we're talking about a charge per ton here. So, you know, the copper content has not a lot to do with it. So, you know, we've estimated what the costs are, and we've got a reasonable margin on those costs. So it's really not related to the copper content at all. It's more a margin on the tons. So it's probably not typical to what you would read anywhere else.
Okay, thanks.
But yeah, but, you know, there have been other contracts in Chile, and, you know, very similar. This, you know, toll treating slag has been done at other facilities, so you might find other examples out there.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from Nick Tour from Las Vegas. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. A couple of quick questions. If you can refresh my memory, at current copper prices of 260 and your full production guidance of around 80,000, what kind of EBITDA and cash flow do you guys generate?
Hi, Nick. It's Rob here.
Hi, Rob.
The curves, you know, are complicated, and we do have it in our corporate presentation because, you know, as the copper prices go down, our royalty goes down. So right now, what we have is our cash costs in the order of about $1.65 at a 260 copper price. Our royalty is in the order of 53 cents. So, you know, the 265 plus the 163 takes us. The 165 plus the 53 is an order of 215, 218.
Okay.
So that covers all our base costs. So anything above the 218, you're talking free cash flow at MVC. Some of that needs to go to debt repayment. Corporate G&A is about 5 cents a pound. Sustaining capex is about 5 cents a pound. So you're talking 230 to cover all the base costs with the bank on top of that. So as long as copper price is round about where it is right now, we can cover the bank, we can cover our sustaining G&A, we can cover everything else. So the free cash flow ability at MVC is still pretty good. But we do have to consider our bank debt, and that's why we've been in discussions with Scotiabank in order to, you know, decrease some of that load to give us a bit more flexibility with that cash flow from MVC.
Right. Now, that makes sense. But I guess, based on your based on sort of the current sort of, you know, what some might call a trough copper price, you're basically trading at, you know, 5x free cash flow, or roughly a 20% free cash flow to equity, roughly around 4x EBITDA.
I know, you know, the company is very undervalued compared to the fundamentals, and you know that is a cause for concern.
Yeah, and I guess you know your debt to EBITDA would roughly be, you know, less than 2x with this refinancing. So you know it seems like a sort of a no brainer financing to me, at least, until unless you know they're. I mean, especially in this environment, this should be like a layup. But in terms of addressing your stock price, do you have some ideas on, you know, what the management can do other than execution to, bring the value of the stock closer to fair value, which is, you know, many multiples of where it's trading at compared to, you know, the comparable companies, especially considering that, you know, you don't have any of the risks associated with mining, and
correct,
your CapEx is quite low.
Correct. Correct. So, yeah, we are a pure play on the copper price. So, you know, as we said before, as the copper price goes up, and I've said in the past that, you know, it's going to take about a $3 a pound copper price, we do intend to start paying dividends. Share buyback has also been talked about, and, you know, I think we would start doing that pretty soon as well. So, you know, when we do have the excess free cash flow when copper price goes up, that is what we intend to do to increase the share price of both, you know, dividends and share buyback.
Okay, fair enough. And I think it's just you know, one suggestion I would have is that, you know, you point out to people, you know, that you are sort of trough copper prices yielding 20% on your equity. You know, the five times multiple and 4x EBITDA multiple, and how that compares to the comps who are, you know, at these copper prices, you know, trading at insane valuations. But last question, do you, you know, at these copper prices, what percentage of the industry is sort of underwater?
Yeah, that's a good question. Certainly, there are a lot of guys on the margin, smaller producers, who are underwater right now and, you know, closing down. You know, Glencore and the Congo has shut down their nickel-copper mine.
Mm-hmm.
There are smaller producers in Chile shutting down. So as a percentage, I would say it's as a percentage in terms of copper tonnage, it's still pretty low, but in terms of the number of companies, I would say it's getting quite high because, you know, the big guys, the Rio Tintos and the Codelcos of the world have very good large assets with pretty low costs, so they can carry on going until quite a low copper price. But it's the smaller companies who are exposed to copper, they are suffering right now, and I would certainly expect to see closures at today's copper price.
Yeah, I mean, I guess even if it's like 2 or 3% of the copper production, I mean, already the copper market is in deficit this year and expected to be in deficit next year. So even if it goes down 2 or 3% because of these closures, I mean, is that sort of in the numbers when people talk about, you know, what the deficit is going to be, or people are assuming?
I don't believe it is. I mean,
closures.
Yeah, you know, Wood Mackenzie's last quote certainly didn't foresee a 260 copper price, and I don't think it was factored in that there would be drops in production over and above what they're seeing right now. So I think the drop in copper price is going to exacerbate the deficit for sure.
Right.
So it's, again, I think, as we've seen in the past, the NBC's been going for, you know, 27 years. They survived low copper prices, and we just have to, you know, go through this cycle, and the answer to low copper prices is low copper prices.
Yeah, no, but I guess you're not just going through it. You're generating, you know, quite a bit of free cash flow.
Correct. Absolutely.
More than necessary to that. But I guess the question would be, you know, do you think, considering that the industry is in deficit and Copper demand seems to be quite steady. In fact, China actually increased substantially their imports of copper in the last quarter. Do you think that these mines that are in trouble are liquidating their inventories, which is driving this copper price lower, especially considering that the LME inventory levels are way below trend, and globally their inventory levels are quite low?
That's an interesting concept, but I think typically small mines would have sold every bit of copper they had in the last 6 months. So I don't think they had large inventories of copper, waiting. I think they've been scraping the barrel for some time, and when they close, it's just going to be with a whimper, not a bang.
Got it. Okay, thanks, guys. Great job. Look forward to the next quarter, because suddenly, once you're hitting the good grade, we'll really start to see the earnings power of this company.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you. The next question is from Jason Nelson from Washington. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Just a follow-up to Nick's question and your commentary about the cash cost of operations. I thought initially when you guys began, forecasting in kind of in the low to mid-80s million pounds per year, that the cash cost of production was going to be more in line with about $1.40. And I think you just told Nick it was more like $1.60. And if it's, one, is there a change to production cost that we should be noted at this time? And then two, if not, then your true all-in sustaining cost then before, interest costs from financing that currently exists and taxes, is more like something just over $2 a pound if we use $1.40, which I believe was the guidance earlier in the year. Am I off somewhere?
The 260 is what we expect for this year, and that's primarily because we the 160, 165 is based on.
Oh sure, but this year is kind of a messy year. I think I'm trying to ask on a go forward basis.
Yeah. So exactly. So we do expect to get back down to where we want to be. So the number for this year is artificially high because of our disastrous first half of the year. The cash costs have been a lot higher than what we expected. So we do expect cash costs on a monthly basis to go back down, and the 165 is an average for the year, which includes the horrible first.
Sure.
Half.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I just wanted to make sure that the call, just in case there's any confusion either on the line or in that in fact on a go forward basis, give or take a nickel or something, it should be and without contemplating the new potential labor contract next year, that $1.40 a pound is still kind of the target production cost.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, but the labor contract is not next year. It's this year, Jason.
Right.
Oh, pardon me.
Thank you. The next question is from John Polcari from New York. Please go ahead.
One quick follow-up question. Would I be correct in assuming that the new financing agreement would allow for dividends from the initiation of the agreement if the copper price was at the right threshold, or would there have to be a certain amount of amortization first?
John, we are trying to preserve all of the existing terms and conditions in our current agreement. It's not tied up to copper price. It's basically tied up to a debt service coverage ratio. So it would basically remain the same as what we currently have in the existing agreement.
Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, you may press star one if you have a question. The next question is from Andrew Swan from Texas. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking the questions. I'd like to try to get a little more color on the labor contract. The idea of getting back to 140 on the cash cost? You know, in other words, where do you see the labor contract, assuming that you are going to have to do, you know, some increase and some signing bonus? How much could that affect that price?
Yeah, I mean, that's, we obviously have to speculate there, Andrew. You know, the negotiation's going to start next week. We have seen precedent before in Chile that there will be a signing bonus, so we do expect a signing bonus. The magnitude of it, you know, we really don't know. So it truly is an unknown. So, you know, to try and speculate on what the impact on cash costs is, and I can't do it. I don't know what the answer is.
And any impact would just be on the quarter in which the agreement is reached, because irrespective of when it's paid, it has to be booked as a labor cost on the period in which the agreement is entered into. So it would be affecting this year, and it wouldn't have any long-term implications. It would
be a one-off signing bonus, which we would, you know, see in the quarter.
But do you think that the wages will stay the same, or will there be an increase in wages going forward?
There normally is a small increase, but nothing, you know, more than we would typically project. So there would be a normal small increase in wages, but the biggest number is by far the signing bonus, and that's the most unknown.
Okay, and I guess what I'm trying to get at, though, is, you know, like, of that $1.40, what percentage of that is labor, and, you know, and if the labor goes up 5% or, you know, in other words, is that a big deal or something you just take in stride?
When the last labor signing bonus that we had in October 2015 had a marginal impact on cost in that quarter. We expect to reach something similar to that this year. As Rob said, we cannot speculate as to the quantum of that bonus, but we are cautiously optimistic that it will not have a substantial impact on labor costs in Q4, when we enter into that agreement.
Okay, well, that's good. And then, you know, back to the renegotiation of the debt, and you think you can hopefully get that done in this quarter?
In the current quarter, in Q3.
Great, because that would, you know, with what's going on in the world, with all the negative interest rates and whatnot, you know, the sooner the better.
It's a good time to do that.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you. No other further questions registered at this time. I would like to turn the meeting back over to Ms. Davidson.
Thank you very much. We thank the participants to the call for their continued interest and support of Amerigo, and we look forward to sharing better news with you on our conference call for Q3 of this year.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.